Thinking back to your school days, did you ever get a zero on an assignment? I know I did. But do grades of zero teach students anything, or do they make it harder for them to succeed? That's one question at the center of the debate over equitable grading. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss what equitable grading is and what it means for students and teachers are Crescendo Education Group founder and author of the book Grading for Equity, Joe Feldman, Fordham Institute National Research Director and co-author of Equitable Grading Through the Eyes of Teachers, Adam Tyner, and Ohio Education Association President, Jeff Wensing. Thank you all for being here today.
Great to be with you, Lucy.
Thank you.
Joe, could you explain briefly what equitable grading is?
Sure. So I was a high school teacher and assistant principal and principal, and I noticed when I was a principal that two teachers teaching the same subject, like Algebra 1, could have classrooms next to each other teaching the same textbook and same instruction, and the students might have the same test scores, but they would get different grades. And so I really started to wonder about how do teachers decide how to grade? I hadn't been trained in how to grade when I was learning to be a teacher, and I realized that most teachers have not received any training on how to grade. So I started researching and found that many of our grading practices are the same as they were in the Industrial Revolution, and they contradict contemporary research on effective teaching and adolescent development and mathematics and statistics. And oftentimes, inadvertently, teachers are using practices that make our grades inaccurate and unfair. So let me give you an example. So let's say I'm a student and I have an essay assignment and I hand it in and it's a B-level essay. So, you know, solid but not great. And my teacher has given us four bathroom passes that we have during the semester, but says that a student can turn in a bathroom pass and get a grade level boost on any assignment. So I turn that in and my B on that essay enters into an A on the grade book. So of course I didn't write an A quality essay. The points were just added. And that allows me not to work as hard because I can just turn in a bathroom pass if I don't do well on an assignment. Or let's say I turn that B-level essay in a day late. In traditional grading, my teacher wants me to learn that I got to meet deadlines. And so as a consequence, they'll downgrade it from a B to a C because it's late. So even though I wrote a B-level essay, my grade in the grade book says I wrote a C-level essay, which in both cases, the grade is inaccurate. Plus, I could be turning it in late because the football game went into extra time, or my parents had to go to urgent care for my little brother and I just didn't have time to do it. So what we want to make sure that we don't want the grades to be inaccurate and include information that is not related to what's being taught in the course. And that's happening on a wide scale through no fault of teachers, because there isn't any education that most teachers get. We did a study and found that over 30,000 grades, that approximately 60% of them are inaccurate. They're either inflated, which means they're higher than what the student actually understands of the course, or they're lower. So instead of traditional grading, where we include non-academic information, we want them to accurately describe student learning of what was taught in the subject. This is sometimes called standards-based grading. In my research and book, I tried to build on that and say, we don't want grades just to be accurate. We want them to be fair, right? We don't want them to reflect circumstances of a student that are outside their control. We want them to meet deadlines, but instead of lowering a grade because the essay is late, particularly if whether they could do it was outside their control, we want consequences for turning in something late to be outside the grade to maintain the grade's accuracy and fairness. So there are 11 of these practices that I discuss. And, you know, I've worked with hundreds of teachers and districts, and we found that when teachers receive training to use these practices, classrooms get more rigorous because students aren't just trying to game the system, right? Like, oh, I've got to turn in my bathroom pass, or I wasn't able to because I was, my parents had to go to urgent care. And students are more accountable to their learning. It's not, you know, this is not rocket science or radical.
Let me ask you about that bathroom pass thing. Is that an actual example?
Yes.
Huh.
There are other ways that teachers do that. I mean, that's kind of an extreme example, but it is something that we've encountered. But sometimes teachers will do things where, you know, a student maybe brings in supplies for the classroom, and that gives them extra points on an assignment. Or maybe they are a very talkative kid, an extrovert, and they contribute a lot in discussions, right? maybe they don't have as much to say, or maybe they do have things to say, but the talkative kid gets more points and the shy kid doesn't get as many points, and those are added to the grade. So what we believe is that we can make grades more accurate and fair when we exclude behaviors and things outside what's taught in the course in the grade.
Adam, what do you think? Is how do you define equitable grading?
Well, I think Mr. Feldman raises some good points there about how grading can be inconsistent and can be unfair. I really like his bathroom pass example because that's totally crazy that that would be a part of a student's grade. It has nothing to do with their academic accomplishments, and it's inflating their grade. And so I couldn't agree with him more about stuff like that. And I think that there are other ways that grading can be unfair. I think research has shown systemic anti-Black bias, for example, in teacher-assigned grades. There's a great paper by University of Minnesota professor David Quinn, where he finds anti-Black bias. It's not a huge effect, but he finds systemic anti-Black bias in grading. And then he actually proposes some solutions and finds in his – this is an experimental study – that when he implements – some new practices like using a rubric, a grading rubric, which we could talk about how all that works, but that eliminated the bias. So I think that there's nothing wrong with trying to make grading more fair and more accurate. That is all to the good. The problem is that some of Mr. Feldman's policies that he promotes are just as crazy as the bathroom pass example is. And it's been getting a lot of attention around the country because when districts try to implement some of this stuff, they get pushback from teachers, from parents, and others. And lots of places have had to run away from these policies as soon as they have adopted them. In some cases, there was a district in California that recently ran away from them before they even started adopting them because they were so controversial. And they're controversial for a reason. And that is that many of these policies, especially the ones that have generated the most controversy, lower grading standards and lower expectations for students. You brought up this 50% rule that Mr. Feldman has been advocating for around the country. He argues for it in his book multiple times. He says that even if a student doesn't even attempt an assignment, they should still get 50%.
I want to correct it, but go ahead. Go ahead.
Finish. I can read from your book if you'd like. But if a student were to get 2 out of 10 on a quiz, we have to give them 50%. No, I can tell you two things about that. We have a lot of opinions and a lot of research, and I've researched grade inflation. And I can bring a lot of evidence to this in a minute if you'd like me to talk more about it. But I can tell you two things about that right away. The first is that that kind of policy is just pure uncut grade inflation. You are lowering grading standards and giving students unearned grades. And that lowers student engagement. It lowers student learning. And there's a reason why, it's so controversial. And I can tell you one other thing is that we at the Fordham Institute, we just commissioned over the last few months the first nationally representative survey of teachers to find out what teachers thought about some of the policies that Mr. Feldman promotes. And what we found is that most teachers have negative views and think most of the policies that we're talking about here are harmful for student engagement. And it's not just the 50% rule. It's getting rid of all deadlines and penalties for grading, for penalties in the grading for turning things in late. It's also changing grading scales to just make it easier for students to get higher grades. Those are grade inflation, or removing participation grades, as Mr. Feldman was talking about. Teachers don't like those policies by and large, although there's nuances that we can talk about. And the reason is because they lower standards, they lower expectations for students. One teacher told us everybody gets at least a 50% is insulting to the students who work. I think a lot of students feel that way too. If they turn things in on time, they feel like somebody else who doesn't turn it in on time shouldn't get the same grade as them.
Joe, you wanted to jump in there?
Yeah, I think Adam is kind of burying the lead of the study, which, they didn't test whether equitable grading helps or hurts students, or what teachers, when they've been trained to use them, think of whether they improve teaching. What was particular about this study was that they deliberately made two design decisions. The first was that they asked teachers' opinions of the practices using common mischaracterizations. So, for example, they asked the teachers, what do you think about mandating that teachers assign a minimum grade of 50%? So in my book, I'm very clear that what we're trying to do is correct the 0 to 100 scale. We're all very familiar with it. You know, if a student doesn't hand in something, they get a zero because they didn't do anything, which makes sense. The problem is that if I've gotten two Bs, you know, an 85 and an 85, and I miss an assignment, which is in a zero, and I average those, I get an F, right? And nobody would say, well, if you get a B, B, and an F, you would average it to an F, right? There's an architectural design of the 0 to 100 scale that actually wasn't how it was originally set up that disproportionately pulls down grades. So I say the problem is the 0 to 100 scale. One solution is minimum 50%, but that is not the best solution. It's not the only solution. It's not the best. The real way to do it is through rubric grading, which is what Adam suggests. So part of what is happening in the study, which is what makes it so particular, is that they are using the common mischaracterizations. Another example is they say, no late penalties. Give students the right to turn in assignments late without penalty. Well, as I just explained, the practice is not giving students the right to turn in things late without penalty. It's that if they turn in something late, there's a consequence, of course, but it happens outside the grade.
What's the consequence, Mr. Feldman?
Can I finish?
Go ahead.
The second thing is that they deliberately did not ask teachers if they have ever used the practices, they've gotten any training to use them, what their exposure was, just if their perception of the district is that there was that practice used. It's like asking somebody their opinion of Cincinnati and then saying, not even caring about whether they've actually been there, right? So there's a couple methodological decisions that they made, which makes this very particular and helps illustrate that when a district mandates a policy and mischaracterizes it, teachers don't like that. And I think that's really the takeaway, is that when teachers are trained to use the practices in their complexity, great things happen. As I said, we looked at thousands and thousands of grades and found that when teachers use the practices, the set of practices, not an individual one, but the set, are trained to use it, are supported to use it, grade inflation goes down. Teachers tell us the classroom has never been more rigorous, because what's happening is that the students are held accountable to their learning. They can't compensate for a low grade by raising their hand a lot, or they can't compensate for missing an assignment by not handing it in and just getting a zero. They actually are held accountable to their learning. So an example is when someone turns in something late, the teacher might want to ask them, hey, why was it late? The student might give an explanation, and the teacher might say, oh, okay, well, it makes no sense for me to give you a zero or lower a grade because it was outside your control. Or maybe the teacher says, if you hand in something late, you have to stay in during recess, or you have to come after school, or you have to give me an explanation or something like that, right? Just like we wouldn't say if a deadline is missed in creating a report, right? Like, so I can imagine that as the folks were creating the report, somebody missed a deadline. Nobody would say, well, that report isn't as good because it was not completed on time, right?
I want to jump in here. Sorry to interrupt you, Joe, but I do want to get Jeff into this conversation. Jeff, you were a math teacher for 26 years. You told me you know teachers who use the policy of giving students a 50% on homework, even if they didn't do the homework. Talk about the logic there from a teacher's perspective.
Well, I can tell you I started teaching in 1993, so I'm probably a bit of a dinosaur when it comes to the years in education. I taught most of those years at Parma Senior High School, actually all of those years in the Parma City School District, but most of those at Parma Senior High School. When I was teaching, I kind of weighted the grades. I made tests and quizzes 70% of your grade and roughly like homework and all the miscellaneous, whether I graded your notebook, I made that about 30%. And at the time I thought that was fair. And why do I bring that up? Because, you know, back in the day in 1993, it was a little bit more autonomous for the teacher. Like, the teacher could do that. They had the ability to say, this is how I'm going to set the grading scale in this class. And as mentioned, you know, my colleague across the hall might do things a little bit differently with the same class. So With that scale, if you got 100% on all your tests and quizzes and didn't turn in any of your homework, you would have wound up with a 70%, which is a C. And I thought that was fair. Now, is it? I don't know. There's probably arguments on both sides of that. But I do remember back in the day as well, and very recently, up until I left the classroom 6 years ago, students at the end of the quarter or semester would always come up to me and ask, are there ways that I can improve my grade? And you would look in the grade book and you'd figure out if they had missed any quizzes or homework, and you might offer them an opportunity to make that up. Maybe you might only give them 80% of their score or something like that. But I think the bottom line, and you mentioned the 50% rule for zeros, the bottom line is, I think as educators, as classroom teachers, we're always looking to help students succeed. And what's the best way to do that? And currently, there is local control. Local school districts have local control. So now, local control for school districts includes setting up how you're going to grade certain classes. So there's not a lot of autonomy for classroom teachers anymore as there was in 32, 33 years ago. So school set standards and in curriculum and grading to address the problem that was kind of highlighted a little bit ago, that one student in one classroom could do the identical work in classroom A, and across the hall in classroom B, the same work is done, but a different grade is earned. So I think school districts are cognizant of that, and they tried to address that problem with a more uniform grading system that they've mandated. And I do remember changing math curriculums, and I won't give the name of the math curriculum that the Parma City Schools switched to, but we did get extensive training on how to use it and how to work with students using the new curriculum and how we were all going to grade the same way. But the bottom line is, I think we're always trying to look at systems to get a very accurate picture of what a student has learned. And like I said earlier, we really want students to be successful. That's what we're constantly striving for as professionals, to be the best we can be to make students thrive and grow and learn.
Well, and Jeff, a 50% is still a failing grade, right? It's just, I guess, not as hard to come back from as a zero would be.
Yeah, absolutely. I understand the concept behind giving students the 50%. As I said, I've been in this business 32 years, and change is hard. But when you sit and reflect, and you're like, what is in the best interest of the student? As was mentioned earlier, there are some outside forces in students' lives, you know, in their family situation. Both parents many times have to work to make ends meet. So that, taking that into consideration, I can understand where a grade of 50% is used in place of a zero, because zeros are hard to come back from. Once you start stacking the zeros, students then shut off. I didn't mention, or no one had mentioned that either. Like, if you have a quarter, one, two, three, or four, when you're in the first quarter, and a student has stacked some zeros already because of circumstances in their life, they realize, hey, this quarter's over, so I'm just going to ride it out. They may become a problem in class, a discipline problem, because they're not doing anything because they're so far behind. They just don't see the value in trying because they're not going to receive a grade for that quarter.
We're talking about that.
Lucy, can I offer just a little context around grade inflation?
Let me first remind our listeners, we're talking about equitable grading, what it is, what it means for students and teachers. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Adam, before you talk about grade inflation, how many teachers did you survey? How many said equitable grading is actually being used at their schools?
Yeah, we did the first nationally representative survey of teachers. We did this study in conjunction with the RAND Corporation, which is a well-known survey research firm that I think Mr. Feldman and others, you know, are familiar with. It's and have cited. It is the first time that anyone has asked teachers nationally what their view of this stuff was. And they did give us some information about whether these policies were in their schools or not. And what we found is that around half of school teachers said that there was a policy, at least one of the five policies we asked about was in their school or district. But very few, it was about, I think, 6% of teachers said that their school or district had four or five of those policies that we asked about. And we asked about the no zeros policy, about getting rid of deadlines, about no homework grades, no participation grades, and allowing retakes for all assignments.
And this was about a little less than 1,000 teachers you all surveyed?
And that's correct. It's a little less than 1,000 teachers. And it was that's exactly right.
Okay. And I want to get to this idea of lower expectations. But, you know, Joe, that idea has come up a couple of times. And Jeff just made a very compelling case for classroom teachers wanting students to succeed. How does a teacher, grades are so important, how does a teacher balance providing meaningful help without just passing a student on to the next grade if they haven't mastered the material or can't read or something like that?
That's right. I think what Jeff really helped illustrate is that there's lots of these practices work together, and we never want a student to be promoted or to go to the next grade if they're not ready for it. And we don't want to, you know, mislead parents about where their students are in their learning. And what you also heard is that there's multiple parts of this. So, you know, when a teacher or a district just implements a single thing and says, hey, you know, we've chosen that we're going to mandate minimum 50%. We're not going to train you on why. We're just going to make you do it. And that's all you got to do. We're not going to help you with anything else. It creates a lot of challenges. And teachers will say, and it's, you know, if you give a minimum 50, it will artificially lift grades and inflate them. And that's why it's so important that districts don't just think about a single practice that they're going to mandate, and that they train teachers around the why and what's the rationale. Because Jeff, as a math teacher, you know, can kind of understand maybe more intuitively or professionally what's wrong with the 0 to 100 scale and why the 50% actually corrects the scale, and can build other parts of his instruction around that. Whereas if you just enforce it from a district, you get lots of pushback and it causes inflation. And so we really, you know, agree with folks who don't want there to be inflation. And that's why it was so significant when we did a study and looked at thousands of grades of teachers, when they use a set of practices, right? Maybe it's that 6% that Adam's talking about. When teachers use the set of all the practices, grades become more rigorous and grade inflation dramatically decreases. And I think that's what we all want, is to make sure that students are accountable and responsible, and that no one is getting promoted or giving false information about where they are in their learning.
Adam, how do you see equitable grading fitting into what students might encounter as expectations in the workplace?
Well, I think that we have some real challenges in the education system writ large right now. Coming out of COVID, we've got, you know, obviously chronic absenteeism has not gone back down to pre-COVID levels, and every measure of academic learning besides grades has continued to come down, especially for students who are lower performing. And so we have a lot of challenges. I mean, one of these challenges is grade inflation. ACT did a recent study where they showed that students had the highest GPAs on record. That's the grade point average they get in high school. And they had the lowest ACT scores on record. That is very clear evidence that grades are going up while other measures of student learning are going down. And it's really kind of like hard to wrap my mind around how anyone could think that if you change all the zeros to 50s in a district, and I've talked to teachers who've had this exact thing happen. They looked in their grade book one day and all the zeros were replaced with 50s, that if that happens, that you're not inflating grades. And it's not just that, because Mr. Feldman doesn't just advocate for the minimum grading, and he also advocates for just changing grading scales to make it easier for students to pass.
Sorry, we're going to have to end there. We've had so much more we could have talked about. I've been talking with Crescendo Education Group founder and author of the book Grading for Equity, Joe Feldman, Fordham Institute National Research Director and co-author of Equitable Grading Through the Eyes of Teachers, Adam Tyner, and Ohio Education Association President, Jeff Wensing. Thank you all so much for your time today. We do have links on our website to Joe's book and to Adam's study if you want to dig into more information about equitable grading. I recommend it. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Carlos Lopez-Cornu. I'm Lucy May. Thanks for listening.